to a sentence, you know, his imagination started to drown, and I realized I needed to do something.
So Herman has died. Albert Wood Fox is still in prison, though his conviction has been overturned 3 times.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? So just to illustrate some of the flaws of our judicial system, Albert Wood Fox's conviction has been overturned 3 times. The state of Louisiana...
In solitary confinement for 40-some
years. Yeah, he's April 17th, which I believe is today. Isn't it? It's the 43rd year of solitary confinement for Albert Wood Fox. Despite his conviction being overturned, he is in West Feliciana Parish Prison Jail in solitary confinement because the state continues to appeal. And right now they're contesting bail. So he's got a bail hearing. He's got an application for bail in front of the federal court.
We only have a minute, and I also want to get to Glenn Ford and the work with him, who was sentenced to death for the murder of a man in Shreveport, Louisiana. After 30 years in prison, Ford was released from death row last year after the state admitted new evidence proves he was not the killer. Last week, I spoke with the lead prosecutor in Ford's murder trial, Marty Stroud, who recently wrote a 3-page letter to the Shreveport Times calling on the state to stop refusing to compensate Ford, who's now dying of stage 4 liver cancer. You're one of his hospice partners helping Glenn. Marty Stroud, since we talked, has gone to meet and apologize to Glenn Ford directly. And
yeah, I mean, Marty Ford has apologized to Glenn Ford. Whether or not that apology is anything significant after enduring 30 years of wrongful conviction on death row in solitary confinement.
And the state still refuses to compensate
him financially. So he's completely underinsured. His medical care is a combination of volunteers like myself who are incredibly honored to be able to serve and work with Glenn, and then basic care from the state.
Well, Jackie Sumel, we will link to your exhibit at the Brooklyn Public Library that has just opened. The book has just come out again, Herman's House. And Frontline is doing a special on Glenn Ford's case tonight. That does it for our broadcast. We're looking to hire a social media producer. That's a full-time job. Go to our website. I'll also be speaking at Colorado College Thursday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. in Colorado Springs. Go to our website for more. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Sarah Monte, and Yermie Shakes, Steve Martinez.
All right. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:01. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting. Have to tell you that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Frog Song Montessori Preschool, a community for mindful learning that encourages children to explore, create, and deepen their understanding of themselves and the world around them, a program of Dharma Rain Zen Center. More information at frogsongpreschool.org.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Break our legs, and we say thank you, and the opera's And good morning, good morning. You are listening to, it sounds like me in a tin can, but...
You know, I kind of feel like we're in an airplane hangar. I think it's because we did this fancy, fancy footwork and have extra mics rigged up. I don't know. We're just going to go on.
All right, we're going to go on. It is 8:04 in the morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. And on KBOO, you are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. This morning, we are...
Broadcast live from an airplane. We just go ahead and claim it.
And it's a great flight. Now, three of the other passengers that are on our flight this morning, we are here to discuss the Renters Assembly, because I don't think anybody in Portland is, maybe if you are living under a rock or not flying in an airplane, you don't know about the situation in Portland as far as rents go. Being able to live, the burden of rent on people and the stress that that causes. One of the things that folks are organizing is called the Renters Assembly. And here with us this morning to talk about it, we have three lovely folks. We have Tori Abernathy, who is one of the organizers of the event. She is also an artist and educator. Good morning, Tori.
Good morning.
And the lovely Joe Clement, KBOO's own Joe Clement, who is one of the hosts of the Old Mole Variety Hour, and an organizer of this assembly, and a library worker. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
And last but not least, we have Margot Black, who is a math instructor at a local liberal arts college, and she is one of the organizers, and she has a great Facebook page called PDX Renters Unite.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Margo, you were kind of organizing, not necessarily with these guys. How did you connect up to the Renters Assembly?
I heard about the Renters Assembly, the first Renters Assembly, through Facebook, and attended that and met Tori and Joe at the first Renters Assembly. And through the first Renters Assembly, the PDX Renters Unite group grew, and so we've stayed connected that way.
Cool. Well, what... Tori, why don't you talk to us about what this here Renters Assembly actually
is?
Yeah,
if we recall, if we turn our minds back just a couple of months, man, I am in the bottom of the tin can. You're you.
No, we're flying, baby.
Yeah, that's it. You were here with Nick Caleb just a couple months ago talking about the first Portland Renters Assembly.
Right.
So if you could give our listeners the sort of overview of what the Renters Assembly is, and then I'd love to talk about how the first one went and where we're going from there. So,
yeah,
the Renters Assembly, what is it?
Sure. So I guess it's quite simple in some ways. The Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent. And we come together to share the narratives of the struggle or otherwise experiences that we might have as renters or with rent-related issues, in an effort to, sort of develop some kind of solidarity around that issue, but also maybe more importantly to personalize that narrative, which is often one that, you know, is not in our hands and is in the hands of those with more resources and power than us.
What do you mean by personalizing it exactly?
Sure. So I think that oftentimes, especially with issues such as rent or debt or things like this, they are characterized in sort of abstract or economic or sort of cold terms rather than personal and human
like statistics,
terms. Like statistics, exactly. Right. And I think that that can serve to further alienate us from one another and feel like we're in competition for these resources, when actually if we come together and talk about them, we might come to understand that we're all experiencing similar struggles and we're in similar situations, maybe though they are from different sides of the spectrum. So, and that's I think something that we learned from the assembly, or at least something that I learned from talking to people who were experiencing issues with, say, for example, there was a person who came who lives farther out east in a trailer park, and I was able to learn a little bit about some of the rights that they might have as an owner of their property, or as an owner of their dwelling, but not an owner of the property where they live. Versus I was also speaking with some property owners and landlords at the assembly who are sharing their experiences and the struggle that they go through to try to provide safe and affordable housing. So yeah, just really from all across the board in different kinds of situations were present, and I think that that was really important.
Anybody from Airbnb there?
Well, actually, there wasn't anyone who was an administrator from Airbnb or anything like that, but a couple people were there, myself included, actually, who had their either properties or, like, for, in my case, my rental on Airbnb. So that was an interesting also.
It sounds very well-rounded.
Yeah.
So yeah. Also, one of the things, I want to get the number out really fast because we were talking before the show and folks really would like to hear from listeners about your experiences with renting or your experience as a landlord and contributions, questions you have for people. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And I'm putting it out there so we can do this early rather than have everybody at 8:50 because you just won't get in it. That's just, it's a physics thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this renter's assembly, what is this one going to be? Is it going to be focusing on something different or, I mean, can't be that different.
Well, the last renter's assembly took a kind of consistent format of opening with time for individual stories. And then by the middle time, once we exhausted that, we opened the floor up to invited speakers from organizations that are doing some sort of community organizing or related work around housing in some capacity. We had Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Dream 2. We had folks from the Right to the City there talking about how housing is an issue that they want to organize on the local level with city council, electoral politics. And then the last whatever portion we could devote to it would be return to a group discussion where we try and piece things together from what we had just discussed and things that we still hadn't brought up yet about how to move forward, political strategies, and the kinds of things that we think that our struggle needs to actually turn into some sort of victorious movement. And at the next one, we are going to repeat that in a lot of ways. We're going to have time for individuals to share their stories. We're going to have members of Socialist Alternative, who also did their own rent control event somewhat recently, there to speak about the issues. Folks from Living Coley, which is a community organizing group of the Coley neighborhood, which is kind of almost outer south or northeast Portland. We're going to have Nick Caleb join us again. Justin Burry from the Community Alliance of Tenants is going to show up. And after those speakers finish their pieces, we're going to return to that discussion and try and piece together how we can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Now, when and where is this going to be?
they're going to be at the Central Library and the North Portland Libraries on Tuesday the 21st at Central Library from 5:30 till about when we close, so that's 7:30, 7:45. And Central Library is downtown. It's the exact address is 801 Southwest 10th, but it's on 10th and Yamhill. It's pretty hard to miss. And then on Sunday the 26th, we'll be at the North Portland Library, which is a beautiful old Carnegie building up on Killingsworth between Williams and Vancouver. The address for that is 512 North Killingsworth, and we're going to be meeting from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library this Sunday, or next Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, Margo, I'm kind of fascinated at your PDX Renters Unite Facebook page. So you said that started out teeny weeny, and now it's gotten to be enormous.
Well, yes, I started it several months ago after I belonged to a few different Portland parenting Facebook groups, and I just kept seeing story after story of mothers worrying because they were trying to find a new place to live, either because their rent had been increased and they had to move, or because they'd received no-cause evictions, or other circumstances propelled them to move and they were panicking about not being able to find anything that they could afford, not being able to come up with the
deposits. That is a horrible, horrible place to be.
And I'm a mother myself of three, and I feel like the rental market has been very brutal to me since moving back to Portland in 2011. And I'd been thinking for a long time that we needed to try to rally around this cause and, you know, as Tori said, personalize the narrative and, you know, help understand that the plight of the renter was more than just the nomad college student, but that, you know, families were feeling the burden not just of rent, but of the kind of process of you know, navigating the rental market and being a renter in Portland. And so I started the group, and I started it with just, you know, several of my friends that are renters, and said, hey, add your friends. And I've just been getting more and more and more requests every day. And it's kind of exciting to have it grow and get more voices in there contributing a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge. Also, a lot of people who are like, you know, can I fight a no-cause eviction? What do I do? Do you have any advice? You know, my landlord said this or won't do that. And a lot of collective knowledge around, you know, good course of action for what can or can't be done. And that, I think it's nice, if nothing else, to have a supportive community to commiserate with.
Mm-hmm. I think that seems really very, very, very important to me. Yeah, because is there like a... is this just going to grow organically? Some sort of
plan?
I don't want to say
future?
Goal. I don't want to say goal. I don't want to say plan for the future, because who knows what that will bring. Joe, yes.
I think that what we're relying on, what I came to the assembly for when I first heard about it, and why I've committed to helping organize the next one, is that these problems require a collective intelligence that even a small group of people can't necessarily muster on their own, and that we need those experiences to kind of inform us about the things that we may not have really noticed about how policies actually shape how people are living in the spaces they have to live in. And I think that a lot of what we're doing is also kind of opening up and challenging the narratives around housing, around even the notion of affordability as being like the real thing that we want, because affordability seems to invite the market back into making the same false promises that it always does about offering access to housing, which is what we need, through this, you know, metric of you have money and therefore that's how you have access.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah, and I think that there are a lot of groups out there, you know, for example, the Portland Socialist Alternative, who are looking into rent control. I think that there are a lot of different types of groups that are working towards specific end goals. And I think that where we're coming from is, as Joe was just mentioning, sort of this perspective of just trying to gather different perspectives and voices on the subject, because, you know, and knowing that we're not going to have the single solution, the silver bullet to this issue. And that I think that potentially gathering those voices and building some sort of sense of community around those things is itself a productive task. So.
Okay, Jill?
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we're also going to have members from the Portland Solidarity Network. They're both organizers and some tenants that are involved in their own active campaigns against miscreant property managers, to talk about how they are organizing right where they live and with the people that they live next to admittedly try to negotiate with the powers that be, but say that we're not just going to be walked over.
Mm-hmm. They're specifically going to be speaking, I think, on the 26th, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. I know, because for my own experience is that I've lived in Portland a long time and been a renter a long time, and it was the easiest place in the world to get a great place to live.
Oh, easy.
And
absolutely.
Then, well, it was. And
no,
then
I
feel like I turned around three times and gentrification hit. It's like, it's been fast and furious. And I'm from parts of the world where there are renters unions and rent control. And we didn't even think about that. And now suddenly it's just hit us like a bulldozer. Mm-hmm. And that's my...
Kind of a literal bulldozer.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I go through my old neighborhood, which is Buckman, I lived in Buckman for a number of years. You know, one of the things, and Buckman, for folks that might not be so Portland-centric as I, is the neighborhood immediately around KABU. It's inner southeast Portland. Technically, it's the river to 28th, Burnside to Hawthorne. I lived on the neighborhood council. It felt like I lived on the neighborhood council. So I was actually privy to a lot of the planning for the neighborhood and development and whatnot. And urban density, yes, we're for it. By all means, it'll help with commute. It'll help with traffic. It's all manner
like
of good,
good
for
time,
so many things. And I'm now in this neighborhood. I'm going through it because I can't afford to live in it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so 10 years ago, we actually bought a house in Outer Southeast, somewhere in the Foster, Arleta, Lentz-ish area. And
I won't say the nickname.
You know, we all know the neighborhood. It used to be known as Felony Flats. It's changing. Everything's
it's Felony
changing.
Flats West now.
Yes.
It's lovely. You know, it's lovely.
It's my neighborhood.
It's the new hip place to live, honestly.
I know.
Well, I'm watching it. And so, yeah, that's the whole thing.
I've watched
that's
the rents like, go up there.
That's kind of blowing my mind mm-hmm. right now. But where I was going with this was in the Buckman area. I am watching just the Fast and Furious condo risings. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of vacant lots up until last year. I was always stunned that there were still vacant lots in Buckman, even after I got priced out. And those are certainly gone now. Who knows how tall those buildings are going to be? I'm just a little perplexed mm-hmm. at the sudden... What it feels like, what infill feels like mm-hmm. As we lose parts of the sky and parts of, you know, seeing the West Hills. And it's an interesting thing. The house that I rented with four other adults, you know, good old bones Victorian in the neighborhood. This was how I chose to live pretty much most of my life. I would go find a good old Victorian to rent, find three friends to rent it with me. Everyone pays $125 a month. Okay, that was 20 years ago. So more recently, you know, people paid $250 a month. Okay. Yeah, that $1,200 that we would rent that four-bedroom Victorian is now a two-bedroom apartment in that neighborhood.
That's still $1,200.
Yeah.
Well, probably more.
I checked out some rents in the neighborhood, and one-bedrooms and two-bedrooms, depending on the building, are going for anywhere between $1,100 and $1,400, mm-hmm. Which is actually more than the mortgage I pay for a five-bedroom house in the Foster Lentz neighborhood. Kind of mind-blowing. How does a young family actually afford to rent their own apartment when we're talking about rents that are $1,100 or $1,200 a month? Margo, over to you.
Well, the rents in my apartment complex, so my rent just went up by 12%. I live in a three-bedroom apartment. It's a fine apartment, no complaints, but it's certainly not one of the new fancy all granite countertop type of places. It's about 40 years old. So my rent started at $1,355 and it's going up to $1,550. The pet rent is also going up. Now that $1,550 was one of the lower choices depending on the length of the new lease I want to sign. So all the way up to $1,895 was one of my choices. I went online to see what they were renting the three bedrooms for to new renters. And between $1,600 and $2,100 a month. And I thought, for a three-bedroom apartment, like, how does a family afford that? I mean, and that's what we are. We're a family. And a good friend of mine who was in the same apartment complex had her rent raised from $900 to $1,400, and she had to leave. She had to move her kids in with their father, and she moved in with her mom because she can't afford to live in Portland.
I was going to say, or they folks have to move out to the suburbs. Which if you can't, like out to Beaverton or Gresham, and then we're talking about more time and more. This whole density thing seems to be falling flat on its face because people are going to have to be having cars or spending hours on transportation getting back and forth to their jobs. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. True enough. So, you know, Oregon State Legislature passed. Legislation. No, it's a little redundant. I was trying to figure out another end to that sentence. Anyway,
well, you just have to go with
yeah, you know, there it is. I think it was in 2013 that prohibits rent control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it was in 1999, but, or maybe
Sometime back, and having some of the language in front of me. The Legislative Assembly finds that there is a social and economic need to ensure an adequate supply of affordable housing for Oregonians.
Okay, check. The Legislative Assembly also finds that the imposition of general restrictions on housing rents will disrupt an orderly housing market. Huh? Okay, so how is it, is the strategy looking at overturning that legislation? Is that where people are looking to start? Joe?
Yeah, I think that one thing that the assemblies have kind of come to represent is that we need a diverse sort of approach to this, and that there are going to be folks who are going to be working on these local or regional legislative issues. There are going to be people who are going to be organizing awareness around direct renters' plight, but overturning this rent control ban would be one major step in opening up those fights to happen on a local level. Very recently, the ban was somewhat lifted on inclusionary zoning in Oregon, but it really is only going to affect developers building houses in the suburbs, and not really the rental market that actually creates the density that we need in cities.
Mm-hmm. Margo.
I'd also, excuse me. One of the more memorable moments from the first renters assembly was somebody realizing that before we can attack rent control and any of the other numerous issues with renting in Portland, we really need to address the issue of no-cause evictions, because if we can institute rent control, but our landlords can still give us a 30-day no-cause termination or 60-day no-cause termination at the end of our lease, what's to stop them from doing that and then re-renting, you know, at market value if they're prevented from raising our rent? So from my own personal perspective, having, yes, I've endured steep rent increases, excuse me,
that's right,
but I've also endured two no-cause terminations. And those were hugely destabilizing to my family, and they're incredibly disempowering. They, more than a rent increase, you know, when you realize that you have to move within 30 days, not on your terms, that's an incredibly expensive, stressful endeavor. And it keeps people from asking their landlords to make repairs. It keeps us from unionizing because we're afraid that we'll be able to, that we'll be kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly prevents any sense of rent control because, again, they'll just ask you to leave if they can't raise your rent. So,
Joe.
I know from Brandon Feld, one of the organizers of the Portland Solidarity Network, that in Seattle they've actually passed legislation that adds a protection for renters seeking to unionize, that's one of the things that renters can say, I've been retaliated against. There are certain protections for no-cause eviction if you can prove, which is usually always very difficult, that you're being discriminated against for one of the handful of recognized classes.
Mm-hmm.
Just being a human being isn't one of them, I guess. But
that don't matter.
But if you can prove that you were retaliated against and given a no-cause eviction up there because you're trying to unionize as renters, then that is something that you can have overturned in court.
So I want to remind people, you are listening to Positively Revolting. This is KBOO Community Radio. We're just about halfway through the show, and it's time to hear from you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. You can also follow us on Facebook throughout the week. That's, you know, where you can find us there. We have a group page. It's not going to call it a group page. It's a fan page. You find us and you like us on Facebook, and then you can see all of the amazing things that Lynn finds and posts. And that's Positively Revolting on Facebook. Or you can also follow us in the Twitterverse, where you can find us at Positive Revolt. I tend to twit, Lynn tends to Facebook. This is our divide and rural sort of...
We're dividing the labor.
Yes.
All right. We've got callers.
We do. Let's go ahead and talk to Mary, shall we? Good morning, Mary. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm a big supporter of KBOO, but your recent comment about the Lantarlita area, Felony Flats, is an area, it's where I grew up, actually.
Yeah.
And wonderful people live there. My husband taught for 12 years in the Lent School. Fabulous people, fabulous families. I think those kinds of comments wound. And I don't know what to expect next from you. Are you going to refer to people as white trash? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, totally. I apologize. And you will not have to expect any horrible things from us.
I can, but
I don't want to.
And not to defend that, because, yeah, you're right. It's true.
I mean,
it's crappy.
From KBOO? Come on. Who are the real felons?
Yeah,
real
I got
felons
it.
work in City Hall.
We are chastised. We are chastised. Do you have... But no, let me go ahead and answer, because I also have to say I grew up in Portland, been here my whole life, and I grew up in St. John's when it was an extremely different place than it was today. And I've worked in the Foster Road area since the 80s. So I'm very familiar with that area and how it's changed over the last 30 years. And there are good people there.
I grew up on 101st and Foster.
I get you.
When Johnson Creek flooded constantly.
Yeah.
And I was there when they put the freeway in, which was really the ultimate death knell. And, you know... You're just better than this. I really expect a lot more.
Okay, and I think you can continue to expect a lot more every now and again.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you.
Every now and again, we fail. And we move on. Let's go ahead and talk with Sean. Good morning. Sean, you have a question for Joe, I understand.
Hey, good morning. Joe, you know, we live in this free market, capitalist, market-based society, and the notion is that it's a type of meritocracy, so... people who have supposedly made good life choices can afford to pay $2,000 a month in rent.
We're laughing hysterically.
Exactly. So, Joe, I was wondering if you could take on that notion of, you know, our society as being a type of meritocracy where the people who've made good choices get to enjoy the finer things in life, and supposedly the people who've made bad life choices, you know, they get the leftovers, so to speak. Just the valorization of a certain type of work versus the work that you do, Joe, on like the Old Mole Variety Hour, which I think is much more productive than anything anybody does at Intel or Nike or any of that sort of thing. So I'll just leave it there. Thanks.
Well, yeah, no, that's a great point. I think that rather than a meritocracy, we live in a moneyocracy, and that's really what is behind that word when it's invoked. But a couple of years ago, I lived in a house in Selwood that was a big old house cut up into apartments. It had slightly under market rate rent, and it was great. We had a garden. It was kind of an absentee landlord situation, so we didn't have to worry about landlords breathing down our necks. And at some point, it wasn't a choice we made. The landlord decided to sell the house out from under us, and they sold it to developers who, as quickly as the city was going to allow them, and they always were going to allow them, to kick us out and then build. They wanted 4, then they got knocked down to 3, and now there are 2 houses on a plot that had 4 living units. And that, I think, is an example of the way in which people's choices are not the last thing that determines what they get in this world.
Or the first.
Yes, I would also say that speaking of things being sort of like a meritocracy versus a moneyocracy, Karen Gibson has a great article entitled Bleeding Albina that speaks to the disinvestment in the Albina neighborhood from 1940 to 2000 that I think does a really great job of sort of describing the ways in which there has been a perception of maybe these neighborhoods as, you know, not the best neighborhoods or something like along these lines, but that actually there were specific legislative decisions on the part of lenders and, you know, property owners to create the situation as it stands that then caused, you know, overpopulation in those areas.
Yeah, it didn't just fall from the sky.
Right.
Situation.
No, it not only did it not fall from the sky, but it really has nothing to do at all with, you know, the types of people who live in those neighborhoods.
The merit of the people in those neighborhoods, yeah.
In fact, it has everything to do with the decisions that were forced upon those people by legislative and otherwise, you know, white property owners and white bankers in the area over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we can learn something from that history that informs how we move forward today.
Joe?
I think the other important thing to remember is that we may be free to choose in a very narrow sense, but we're not usually free to choose our choices. And that these assemblies, a lot of the work we do on KABU is about trying to demand control over the choices that we have over where we can live, the kind of world that we live in, and you know, undercutting that notion that the market, the world that exists now, is natural somehow and is not itself the product of a bunch of collective choices.
Yeah, I cannot argue with that
at all.
At all.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. We are talking about renting in Portland and beyond. And actually, we're talking about people coming together in the Portland Renters Assembly. This is taking place next week on the 21st and the 26th. Both events will be held at libraries in town as they offer community rooms for community events. And that's kind of a nifty service of libraries, isn't it? I like that in a library. So on the 21st, it's the Central Library, and on the 26th, it's the North Portland branch. Is that correct? Joe, the times and all that kind of good stuff again?
Yeah, at Central, we'll be meeting at 5:30 and then going on till about 7:30, 7:45. And at the North Portland branch on the 26th, we'll be meeting at 1 and going on until about 3. We are going to try and provide snacks. It'll be first come, first serve. And we're going to have assistance available for people who have children who want to attend and they don't know that they could keep their kids occupied while trying to sit down for an hour or two. So that is going to be available at both of these events.
Excellent. And the bases are loaded right now, and we should get to some more callers. Paul, you're on Positively Revolting.
Hi. Thank you. You can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. This is Paul Cienfuegos, and I just wanted to let the organizers know, I think this is such a critical thing, and I'm a longtime renter too, and spending a lot on rent, that just because the Oregon legislature has banned local communities from passing rent control doesn't mean that you can't actually run a ballot initiative on rent control and push back, that there's actually a long history of communities challenging state legislatures that have banned local communities from passing certain things. You know, something like medical marijuana that the California voters many years ago started the process of legalizing marijuana, even though federal preemption bans states from making medical marijuana laws, they did it anyway, and they pushed back, and now we can see the results. They're very positive. Mm-hmm. You know, the Oregon legislature in special session last year banned counties from regulating GMO agriculture, but counties are continuing to pass these laws anyway through the ballot box. It's going to be on the ballot in just a few weeks in Benton County, which is Corvallis. And the ordinance actually says that the state doesn't have the legal authority to ban us here in Benton County because that violates our constitutionally protected rights of self-government. Mm-hmm. And it creates a very interesting crisis of jurisdiction, which is, I think, what you want, because when a higher level of government says, I'm sorry, you can't do that, it's illegal, the response from we the people needs to be, well, I'm sorry, but we're not going to allow your laws to be implemented in our county because you're violating our rights of self-government. And there's actually 200 communities now in 9 states that have done just this and have pushed back on these preemptive laws. And I think this is something that would have enormous positive response if you thought about a ballot initiative.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Paul.
Yeah, I'd happily tell the organizers more about this, and Annie knows has my contact info. So
true.
Yeah. You should come to the assembly and tell everyone about it.
Unfortunately, yeah. I cannot make the 21st or the 26th, but I'd be happy to make the next one.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
And always good. More types of organizing, more ways of claiming our collective power. Let's go ahead and talk to the next person.
James.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, James.
Hey, yeah, KBOO supporter, love what you guys are doing. I'm excited. I don't know if I'll be able to make any of the renters' assemblies, but this is
There'll
just
be more.
Okay, yeah, because I'm excited.
You know, get on the Facebook, get on the PDX Renters Unite Facebook page and follow that, and also KBOO, and what?
Oh, and also we have a website that is portlandrentersassembly.info, and we'll be updating that.
So keep in touch, and I'm sure there will be more. But did you have a question?
Okay. Well, no, it was just more of I guess I didn't really, I don't know, I just really wanted to thank you guys for what you're doing. I just see such a criminalization of people, not even necessary, I mean, poor people, definitely, but people who just don't want to conform to what society thinks we should be. I mean, there's a whole host of us who really don't, they don't want to be in big CEO jobs. We don't want to have, you know, we want to spend more of our time devoting to helping our communities. And, you know, mm-hmm. and that really doesn't take much more money than what you... You just take heart and effort and time, and it seems like everything we have is...
Yeah.
Everything we have, everything that's being implemented is just a way to take away time from us that we could be using to better our communities and just making people more complacent and wanting to just hand over what should be social responsibility to people who have no connection or no interest.
You know, a cunning plan, isn't it?
Yeah.
A cunning plan, I say.
Well, I also just want to point out, I mean, as somebody, again, who has, you know, I was born in Portland in 1966. I have never lived nowhere else. I've watched Portland change a whole lot. I've been priced out of three neighborhoods, starting in Northwest Portland, which was a really...
I remember it well.
I gotta say, you know, when I was a little teenage runaway, it was an extremely supportive area of town. There were all-night coffee shops and a whole lot of mutual aid just sort of in the air. You know, rent parties, yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out how to keep everyone where they are. And, you know, and then gentrification happened. It was my first taste of it. In the mid-80s in Northwest Portland. But I got to say, you know, Lynn was mentioning Portland has always been a real easy place to find housing until very recently. And and in my life of trying to find a big old house and a whole lot of people to live in it so we can all live dirt cheap because we're activists and artists and people that want to experience, you know, pleasure as opposed to running on a hamster wheel chasing a carrot, you know, that's, and getting with that kind of program, you know, that's all one thing. But I got to say, even the people that are on the hamster wheel chasing the carrot, even they can't find housing in Portland right now.
And eat at the same time.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Maybe one or the other.
It's like we just had like three houses knocked down in our neighborhood, and then now they're pushing up in their place like three little row homes that are standing. You know, it's like one big house is like equal to four little miniature houses. And they're all going to go for a ridiculous price, which is just way pushing up the population density and still pricing more people out of the neighborhood, especially people who have lived there for 30, 40 years. It's unacceptable.
It's absolutely unacceptable. Thank you very much, James, for your call this morning.
Thank you for what you're doing.
Take good care. You know, in checking out, I decided to go on Craigslist a few days ago to just sort of see what was that. Because, again, next month marks the 10th anniversary of me living in the house that Teresa and I have bought or are buying from the bank. I mean, you know, whatever. It's never actually going to be ours, but, you know, it's okay. It's longer than I've ever lived anyplace else because I haven't been thrown out so that the landlord can renovate and jack the rent. You know, that's kind of cool. But so I'm a little out of touch with like what current prices are. Imagine my shock and surprise when I found in Vancouver, a 350-foot square foot apartment for $800 a month. That's Vancouver. They were $1,000 a month in Portland. Slightly more square feet. Wow. Mm-hmm. The hell. Mm-hmm. You know, that is that's insane. And I do not understand how families are making it. I really just don't. Unless you had some sort of foresight and ability to buy in a while back. I don't know. I started looking further afield. You know, I found a couple places I think I could afford, maybe in Gresham. There was one place in Tigard I think I could afford. And other than that, I'm like, wow, I'd be just damned out of luck. And that was a little stunning to me. That was a little reality check. Yeah. So I'd say that I see a lot of potential tie-in and coming togetherness with other campaigns that are currently happening, like the 15 Now campaign and other movements for social and economic justice. Have you contacted people from other groups, and what's the synergy? I like how all guests point at each other. That's awesome. That was a good radio moment.
We have not gone much further afield than organizations that are dealing in some kind of direct way with housing. I think the Right to the City Coalition is a good example of a group that is working on multiple fronts, housing included, that brings those all together as, you know, part of a common struggle. I like how James, you know, raised the issue about having time, and that really kind of opens up this notion of affordability to more scrutiny, because, yeah, if you work 40 or more hours a week, you could probably afford some places in some technical sense, but you're just working to live in that respect.
I work 40 hours a week. I don't feel like I can afford very much in Portland.
And then there's that.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if $15 an hour is enough for folks.
Well, I can tell you, I make a scooch more than that, and I couldn't afford to rent any of these places. $785 a month, $800 a month. Okay, technically, I could afford it. I'd be returning to my college days of, ramen and not a whole lot of anything else.
Yeah, and I think that one of the other things that had come up in the first assembly has come up on the PDX Renters Unite group, and that we want to bring up again at the next assemblies, is public housing and the fact that we're worrying about trying how to fix the market. It isn't broken. This is how it works.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very good point.
Really, the city recently, the PDC in particular, the Portland Development Commission, which has been an engine of a lot of gentrification recently, has made a kind of about-face in saying that it's going to somehow devote $20 million to affordable housing. A lot of that is still in the realm of trying to incentivize developers operating on the private market to somehow do the right thing, rather than just directly creating the housing
that
people need. Yeah. And, you know, this is going to sound like a heresy in this society, but taking it at a loss, at renting it out at a loss, because the housing is what people need, not some kind of financial magic where we are making profits off of it, off of the fact that people need a place to live.
And that's something that's really important for us, is thinking not just, I mean, trying to transfer the conversation from something like affordable housing into the idea that actually what we all need is a home, a safe and healthy home to live in, regardless of the cost, right? And so how can we think about really trying to push that conversation in terms of like how this is the primary agenda, as opposed to operating through sort of like different legislative actions that might improve the situation for renters in the short term, right? So.
Yeah, I like how you guys think about this. I think we have a caller, Mike. Mike.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to Positively Revolting.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, one of the previous callers touched on what I was going to talk about, and that is an alternative to renting is buying. Interest rates are low.
But an alternative for whom, I think, is the big question
What's your...
Margo has a comment about that.
Well, I'd love to take this on because I hear this all the time. I feel like I'm in a sea of homeowners who just tell me to stop complaining about renting and buy already.
Yeah, get with the program, Margo.
Exactly. And a lot of people who say, gosh, your rent is more than my mortgage. And, $1,200 mortgage, if I were to, so I'm a first-time home buyer. I don't come from a family of wealth. I have childcare and I have student loans that are about as much as your mortgage. And to pay $1,200 mortgage, would if I put 3.5% down, accounting for taxes and mortgage insurance.
She's a math instructor.
I'm a spreadsheet ninja. Would be a $150,000 house. If you could find me a $150,000 house for my, you know, for my three children and animals, then I would be more than happy to consider buying that. But I think there are a lot of reasons that people don't buy houses besides inaffordability. that, you know, that are responsible. I think there are a lot of very responsible people out there who are renting for various reasons, who, you know, either are priced out of owning a home or are in, you know, certain situations that make it irresponsible to buy a home. You know, my husband and I were in graduate school until just a few years ago, and I didn't feel like we should have taken out a huge loan while we were in graduate school, sort of hoping that the market would just keep growing like a lot of our friends did. Then we were on, you know, 1 year visiting visiting positions or adjunct positions, and it just never felt like a good time to buy a home. Meanwhile, the market just kept going up and up and up and up and up. And we did go look at a home on Southeast 139th Avenue for $300,000. But then it was a question of, you know, do I want to take my kids out of the school that they're in and turn my 10-minute commute into a 50-minute commute under great conditions, just in order to buy a house that I still really can't afford?
Yeah. and to point out that Portland...
Answer me this question. The home you're in now that you're renting, what do you think it's worth?
My three-bedroom apartment? Well, I don't know.
An apartment.
So I'm also going to interject and just say...
What do you think the landlord paid for that apartment?
I think that esoteric. I want to bring it back to our reality base, because there's an apartment building, right? She's not actually going to buy a part of the apartment building. I don't know exactly where you're heading with this. I get the old saw that all renters are... Excuse me.
I understand that there's a difference between an apartment and renting a house.
Sir, you're going to have to let everybody in on the conversation.
But I wanted to mention...
I've only been allowed to talk maybe two times.
So, okay. I'm going to go ahead and mention that the median housing price for buying a house in Portland at this time is $310,000. That's the median price for buying a home in the Portland area.
And that's a mortgage of over $2,000 a month if you're a first-time home buyer with only 3.5% down.
Exactly. Okay. So,
there are cheaper places in the United States.
So just leave town.
She just doesn't deserve to live in this.
You make the choice to live there.
You're leaving Portland is something that I have leaving Portland is something that I've absolutely considered, because I have found the cost of living here to be, you know, so high that I can't actually enjoy what I moved back here for. I fell in love with Portland when I was 15 years old and lived in Salt Lake City, and decided this is where I was going to make my life. And I did. I came here, and I am your bootstraps person. I was orphaned young and a young single mom, and I went to college. I got a full scholarship. I went to graduate school. I got a master's degree. My husband has a PhD. We're both in STEM fields. You know, and we are living paycheck to paycheck between the utilities and the childcare and the rent. And we've absolutely looked at living outside of Portland, but I think Portland needs to take a good look at that and say, you know, do we want people leaving Portland because they can't afford to live here? I feel like I have put a lot of heart and soul into this community, and and I think that if the answer is, well, if you don't like it, leave, you got to ask, you know, who you're making leave.
That's
I think I have a lot to offer Portland.
Portland sustainable.
I understand that. Have you, do you think you're underpaid at your job?
So,
and that's part of it?
Yeah, definitely.
I got to go ahead and ask you, sir. You seem fairly invested in sort of turning this around and making it a renter's issue in the way of, well, yeah, renters should get with the program and start buying your houses. And, you know, what's your problem? Quit whining. And I don't know if that's the way you intend to frame things, but you might want to look at that, because that is in fact how you're framing things, and it's a lot like blaming the victim. We're talking about a housing market that's out of control, that are pricing longtime Portlanders out of this area, and actually trying to harness people's power to make positive social changes, to say, no, this is our community, this is our neighborhood, we're going to stay here, and you're profiteering off of our lives needs to stop. That's the solution I believe is called for in this area. That's the solution that we are worthy of in this area. And I think that might be, in fact, what the Renters Assembly is also kind of going for. I'm just going to go ahead and guess. Thank you very much for your call, Mike. Do play again next week.
Okay.
And
We have only a couple minutes left. Joe, you wanted to say something.
I think that you kind of got to the point I wanted to make, which is that part of this isn't just considering, oh, how is it technically feasible that some people could maybe afford to buy their homes, but they shouldn't have to. Mm-hmm. That they shouldn't, there shouldn't be a class of people in this society who have the power to move people around in that way just because they have the money to do so. And, in the last couple of minutes, we should mention again where the renters' assemblies are going to be. The first one is going to be this next week on the 21st at the Central Library in downtown. That's going to be a Tuesday night. It'll start at 5:30 and go on till about 7:30, 7:45. And then the next one will be at the North Portland Library, which is up on North Killingsworth at 5112 North Killingsworth. April 26th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. At both, we're going to try and provide snacks and childcare to make it easier for people who have a hard time making it to these kind of things to come.
Excellent. And I just for one second want to let folks know what's coming up on KBOO this morning at 9 on Veterans Voice. Angie Hines interviews Marine Corps vet and war resistor Makiadut.
Micaiah. We know him. We've had him on our show before.
Oh my God. Sorry, it was a wonderful phonetic spelling, Kathleen, but I didn't get it. Okay, Micaiah Dutt, who deployed four times to Iraq, and the Iraq War Army vet, Ian LaVey, about the trouble with thanking veterans for their service and popular blanket statements like support the troops. Thank you for doing that, Angie. Okay, thanks for listening to KBOO, and thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can remedy that situation by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. So do we want to squeeze a caller in? We can maybe know.
One very quick question.
If you can be quick.
Or comment. Good morning.
Annie?
Hi.
Hi. Have you got a quick comment?
Well, I do have a quick comment. I was listening to the show this morning while I was getting ready for work, and then when I got here, I decided to call you guys. I do have a comment. When I heard that there is no rent control, 2015, there's no rent control in Portland, and then somebody mentioned that there had been a law passed in the state legislature forbidding some kind of, I don't know,
it's ORS 91.225, local rent control prohibited.
Right. So that was passed in the legislature. I forget what year you said it was. You guys...
Not sure.
Yeah. It's 2015. Portland, Oregon. Oregon is one of the most progressive states in the union. I mean, you know, and Portland...
Minnesota, we have 30, why, you got 30 seconds.
Why are we... I'll mention it again. The year is 2015. Yeah. We are just now addressing this issue. I mean, and this is...
Well, but we are, and we need to move on.
Okay, let me finish. To have this forum finally now, you know, it's well overdue.
Okay, thank you.
It's
so
true.
Much. We absolutely
well
agree, and now we're doing it. So...
You better. You got
cool.
To get to work.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for your comment this morning, but we are running out of show.
Okay, go.
And go team. We have Francis. Francis, you've got 1 minute. Good morning, Francis.
You have Ani. Hi. Southwest side, where the first urban development was, to Buckman, to Northeast Portland.
Yep.
And, I want to know who can afford to live in the Pearl. I don't think anybody that grew up in Portland, unless they have a really high-paying, good job.
You know, I had the most...
I'm kind of amazed at the...
30 seconds, Francis.
Okay. You know where there's some good rents? Las Vegas.
Okay.
Right, we can all go to Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas, okay, baby. Bye-bye. Thank you, Francis.
Francis, no.
Thank you. Water, but there's rents.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Thank you, Francis, for that. And we are out of time. So how do people contact folks interested in adding energy to Portland Renters Assembly?
Well, if you go to portlandrentersassembly.info, there's actually a button on the little bar there that says subscribe, where you can be added to our mailing list. And we will send you email updates with our press release and any other information that might pertain to future goings-on and future assemblies. And there's also a Facebook event the second Portland Renters Assembly that you can find and attend on Facebook.
And we have a link to that on the Positively Revolting page on Facebook. You can find us there, like us, and follow along throughout the week as we decry the injustices of this world today and fight for a better one for tomorrow. With that, we'll be back next week, and stay positively revolting.
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And it's 9 a.m. You do have it tuned to KBOO Portland, and we are standing by for the Veterans Voice to be on. And that will be followed at 10 by Cascadia. It's headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints. Today on Flashpoints, Flashpoints looks at potential breakthroughs in the decriminalization of pot at the federal level. Also, playwright and performance artist Sherry Glasser talks about her battles with law enforcement over the use and sale of medical pot. And Flashpoints criminal justice correspondent Randy Krudako is facing major charges